President Trump has been meeting today with European Union and NATO leaders in Brussels, day 6 of 9 on an ambitious tour through the Middle East and Europe. But ambition is no stranger to presidential trips abroad. And we're going to take a look back now at the history of that with Brian Ballow and Ed Ayers, historians and co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Guys, welcome back.
Thanks very much.
And take us back to the early days. Was it always expected that a president would make foreign trips?
Au contraire, as they might have said in early America. throughout the 19th century, it was not the expectation at all. And matter of fact, domestic travel was so bad that people weren't sure they should do that even.
Well, and it wasn't even easy to travel in those days, especially far away.
Well, yeah, but think about this. So George Washington takes the most extensive domestic travel of any president before the 20th century. And he decides that this whole new country is not going to hang together if people can't actually see the federal government, of which he's the only embodiment. So he travels to all 13 states. You can just imagine what kind of quagmire that the roads were then. It worked out. People were really worried that this was going to be seen as a monarchical procession, but instead he struck the domestic tone and people thought, okay, maybe this country does have a future.
So what was the first planned foreign trip made by a U.S. president?
I'm not going to cede that so easily because that's the early 20th century. I will go ahead and let Brian give you the answer, but I want to point out what a prologue there was to all that.
Yeah, we are arguing about that as you speak, Jeremy. But historians do agree that the first formal trip by a president to a foreign country was Teddy Roosevelt in 1906. And he went down to Panama by boat, of course, and he spent 3 days there. And you might say that he was checking on the American investment in the Panama Canal, kind of kicking the tires, if you will.
But there's disagreement about that, about whether that was the first trip?
Only on the part of Ed Ayers.
Well, I just want to tell you how close we came. Let me just evoke these two moments. Andrew Johnson's walking across the bridge at Niagara Falls and almost steps into Canada before he catches himself. And then William McKinley almost steps over into Mexico because he's right down there in Texas. Then he goes, oh, no, that would be wrong.
Yeah, and I just have to say, Jeremy, I find that so cool. It's almost like there's this invisible fence. I mean, it was really wrong to go to a foreign country.
Yeah, I mean, what would be the point? I mean, if you're the president of the United States, you have work to do here. And so I think that the idea was that you were serving this country. You had no right to be dilly-dallying in places like Canada, Mexico, much less Europe.
All right, well, let's talk about one of the most famous trips abroad by a U.S. president, and that would be President Nixon's trip to China.
Well, that really was a game changer for American foreign policy. And it actually was so important that years later, people referred to, well, that would be like Nixon going to China. And what people meant by that is Richard Nixon was associated with conservative foreign policy, very anti-communist. And for a guy who was so tough on communism to go to the People's Republic of China and these scary communists. And we have to remember how afraid Americans were of the People's Republic of China in the 1960s and early 1970s. When Nixon announced that he was going to go to the People's Republic of China in 1972, it just signaled a gigantic shift in foreign policy. And this really does underscore why more courageous presidents in the 20th century who ventured afar, why they did it. Because it could signal a very important change in foreign policy.
Now, if you think back to 1962 and President Kennedy's visit to Berlin, these days, all you think of is, ich bin ein Berliner, right? Which was not even the right thing to say. But what was the importance of that trip?
Well, apparently it meant I'm a German pastry,
right.
Not not one of you from Berlin. But that was so important, Jeremy. And it was almost the opposite of Nixon's trip to China. And it's another thing that presidents do when they travel. Far from a shift in foreign policy, Kennedy was signaling to West Germany, to France, to England, we are going to stand behind you in these really, really tense times. And you have to remember, East Germany and the Soviet Union supporting it had just built the Berlin Wall, and Kennedy went there to signal to the Western democracies that they had the support of the United States, and the president himself was going to go to Berlin to underscore that.
I realize I'm going back in time here as we go through some of these examples, but let's continue on that journey and talk about FDR's trip to Yalta in 1945.
Well, you've just touched on another reason that 20th century presidents traveled. Roosevelt was going there to meet with his key allies, with Churchill, with Stalin, to really map out what the world order was going to look like after World War II came to a close.
Brian, isn't that what we imagine that foreign travel should be like, that would have a real concrete purpose and great photo ops?
I think that often it's just one or the other. I think this was less about photo ops and much more about real purpose. Of course, the irony, Ed, is the purpose became so disputed in the post-World War II world. What did Roosevelt really say? Did he really signal to Stalin, wink, wink, nod, nod, it's okay if you exercise control in Eastern Europe? Americans have battled over that for 20 or 30 years afterwards. But certainly at the time, going there to work out with allies what the world order was going to look like. This is, of course, what Woodrow Wilson thought he was doing when he went to Paris and Versailles for the peace conference that concluded World War I. Again, Wilson thought that this was a great moment for the United States to help shape the world order. In fact, the whole incident ended in a tremendous political defeat for Woodrow Wilson when his own U.S. Senate rejected that treaty years later.
Hmm. Has it always been the sort of unwritten rule when the president is out of the country that his political enemies in the U.S. are not supposed to say anything bad about him?
Well, that's one of the reasons that there was such reluctance to travel in the first place, because not only do you worry about what your enemies might say, but you wonder about what your allies might do. Mm. Who's actually running the show back there? We don't really have a very strong structure for the distribution of power when people left office. And so there was a lot of concern that, oh, gosh, who's in charge here now? What, George Washington is traipsing up and down the North American continent. So I think it creates all kinds of anxieties on all kinds of fronts.
Now, let's talk about flubs abroad, and I think back to George H.W. Bush vomiting on the Japanese prime minister.
Are we allowed to say that on public radio, Jeremy?
I think so. I just did.
Well, what I will say is that, in fact, President Bush had been feeling nauseated for the whole day, and one could really give him a lot of credit for just showing up at this dinner. But if we're going to hand out credit in an unfortunate situation, it is true that he vomited, in essence, into the lap of the Japanese prime minister. But if we're going to hand out medals, we got to give one to Barbara Bush. I was just watching this video the other day, Jeremy. It's just amazing. She grabs a napkin. She runs over. She puts it over the president's mouth. She ducks his head below the table so it's not as graphic as you might think. And then she just, you know, with great presence of mind, walks back and sits down at her place. Then all hell breaks loose. The Secret Service guys are jumping over tables, et cetera, et cetera. But there you go. I mean, these are some of the dangers of non-controlled situations.
When did foreign leaders start coming to the U.S.?
That was much earlier. The big one is Marquis de Lafayette, 1824, the great French hero of the American Revolution. And like Washington, despite the terrible travel, covered the entire United States. And everywhere he went, he was paraded and banqueted and celebrated. So that was a big deal. But it's not again until after the Civil War when the King of Hawaii is brought to visit President Grant. So that, too, is very spotty. We don't really see much of a trend until suddenly it seems the United States enters the world in the 20th century.
That's Ed Ayers and Brian Ballow, historians and co-hosts of the podcast Backstory. Guys, thanks so much.
Bon voyage.
Thank you.